You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. So it's now turned into kind of an annual event. Now that Netflix has gotten a hold of Charlie Brooker's techno Twilight Zone show, Black Mirror.
They have assimilated him.
They've sped up the rate of new episodes. Mm-hmm. And I certainly would argue that since that happened with season three, I would argue neither season three or four overall is as strong as season one and two were per episode. Mm-hmm. But there's still always... It turns into a major water cooler conversation show. And yeah. I can't count the number of people who I've talked to whose order of favorite episodes is completely opposite from everyone else I talked to.
I mean, that's a mark of the quality. I mean, I agree with you, but I would say that they have produced the two best episodes in the last two seasons. Well, you got, I mean, we're going to get into it, but San Junipero.
Well, San Junipero is probably my all-time favorite episode.
I think it's so overrated.
Yeah, really? I know other people feel the same way.
I mean, everyone's always talking about, oh, San Junipero this, and San Junipero this, and I'm like, I thought it was just okay. I mean,
well, I didn't see it.
Yeah. No, I was fine. I was just like, I was a little bored.
It's one of those things that, like, for me, I don't know, whatever, it touched me emotionally in a way that, like, it's become one of those go-to when I feel like I need to cry. Mm-hmm. And I need something that's going to make me cry, and I'll watch that.
Yeah,
and that'll make
but
me
we all
cry.
Know I don't have any emotions, Chris.
That's true. You are my favorite robot.
No, I'm sort of the same way. Like, I watched it last night just because I was like, I need to just watch something that's heartwarming.
Yeah.
Just let me watch this.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But this season certainly is, I feel like maybe the most...
Uneven
of all the seasons. There's certainly, like, there's episodes that every episode here... Even the ones I like the most, I feel like they could have been better.
Yeah, it just feels like the thing I find about Black Mirror is that most of your Black Mirror episodes and things like this, they want to have a big premise or a big objective that they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And I think there was a few episodes this season that really didn't have anything they were trying to say about humanity in the modern era. They were just, let's just get a science fiction plot up there.
Well, there were a few like that, but I felt like there were, on the other hand, some of those that did say that, they were so ridiculously on the nose mm-hmm. that it was just kind of like, okay. But let's go episode by episode through this season four. I am Chris.
Patience.
Elliot.
And yeah, I was actually shocked more people didn't want to come on this one. I was like, really? Nobody else skyrockets through Black Mirror every season like I do?
2 days, guys.
Yeah. I was like, it's six episodes. Come on.
No, it was easy to get through. Like, but I think it's because Christmas fell at a really weird time this year. So, like, I feel like everybody's having a harder time getting back into the year. Because it's like, it fell on a Monday, and so it's like, it's been a weird...
Sunday, Monday, and then Sunday, Monday, and then you're just like, why are you not watching Black Mirror in between?
Yeah.
But we're going to go in order of the release of the numbers of the episodes here, and start with the one that seems to be everybody's either favorite episode or least favorite episode, depending on who you talk
to.
We know it's Johnny Neal's least favorite episode.
It was salty.
Man, when he gets on a rant about something where he just gets a burr under his ass, he will go on, like, he's like responding to himself. You'll see a giant thread on Johnny Neal's page about USS Callister, and it's all him.
Yeah. And Martin being like, yes.
Well, you know, I can't agree. I think this was not my favorite of the season, but it was indeed one that despite my problems with it, and I have a lot of problems with it, it's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, it's my second favorite.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was my favorite.
Okay. The story here follows Robert Daly, played by Jesse Plemons, or as we still like to call him because it's just too perfect, Meth Damon.
Meth Damon.
I mean, come on, he does. He's Matt Damon. Like, it's like he's the after picture with the meth is a hell of a drug thing with Matt Damon.
He's the one they left on Mars.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the Matt Damon we don't go save.
But he's like a seriously introverted, but super smart programmer who's developed this incredibly popular, massively multiplayer MMORPG like a sci-fi one. And even though he is the creator of this whole thing, it's Jimmy Sampson playing James Walton, who is the face of the company. He's the talker. He's the guy who's like, hey, I can be chairman. I'm the guy who does everything.
And he's the Corey.
Everyone thinks he's the guy who built the thing, kind of. They forget that Jesse Plemons is even there because he's like just hides out in his office and does like, you know, grunt tech coding work.
Well, he's a coder. I mean, he's a coder. Engineers are the same way. It's like, if you're good at a technical skill, you like doing that thing. You don't like interfacing with people. And the business guy is more than happy to just take all the fucking credit.
But when we first meet him, in this episode, it's like, and baffling. I remember seeing the trailer for this going, this is Black Mirror? Mm-hmm. Where it's totally a 60s Star Trek knockoff thing, and he's the Captain Kirk doing this great sort of Kirk-esque impression.
Well, he's doing an impression of Chris Pine impersonating Kirk.
Yeah, yeah.
In that one scene in Star Trek 2009.
Yeah, you're watching this, and they're on an adventure with his crew of people on the ship, and they're all like, you're the best, Captain! And then he, like, makes out with the girl characters there. But no tongues. And we find out, okay, this is just a program, and this is his private version of it. Because the regular program's more modern. He's this big fan of this old TV show, which is essentially Star Trek.
Yeah.
And he's, like, made his private mod on his private server at home where it's that only he can do that is this. And as we see him go to work, we realize all the people on the bridge are based on people
Creepy.
That he works with, right?
Creepy.
You know, I could see doing that as well if it wasn't for the fact that, as we find out, they are all AIs, like true AIs.
Here's the thing. Before we get too far into that, I'm going to put this into 2018, and it's still weird to say 2018 because that's Sequest year, but whatever. But this is the guy at your
office. That's right. This is the year of Sequest. Yeah. I forgot.
So imagine you had a game like Destiny or World of Warcraft. This is the guy that found a way to have a private server, got pictures of all of the people he works with at work, puts them on them, and then beats them up.
I have nothing...
Even without AI, still creepy.
I have nothing inherently wrong with that. I don't have the skills to do it, but I'm just... That this episode convinces you very early on that these people are indeed, like, if Picard came across these people, he'd be like, well, we can't kill them because they have become sentient.
What is the measure of the man?
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's one of those things like, wow, and they remember everything about their real lives of the people they're based on.
They're essentially like digital clones.
Yeah, it's they woke up horrifying. In this world, and we realize they've been trapped there with this guy who is the angry internet fanboy who is taking out all his aggressions and rage on them, which, once again, like I said, if they were mindless, I wouldn't care. But the fact that they are indeed, they have all the memories of the people they were, in every way they're sentient. They're just digital copies.
So here's the, you know, thinking about it, teasing it out, what's even worse is that he had to make them that way.
Yeah.
He could have given them a clean slate.
Yeah.
But he wanted them that way. He wanted them to be aware of it.
Yeah.
Which makes it even worse.
I think that was one of the most important parts of this episode. And this is the most Black Mirror-esque part of the episode. Because there is a lot of humor and comedy in this that's not characteristic of Black Mirror. But one of the things that makes it that way is the fact that he is perfectly... you know, he knows what he made and he treats them like action figures. Like, he doesn't care about what pain they go through. He tortures them. One in particularly, he tortures in a very brutal way. I don't want to give it away because that was one of the biggest things that we were just like, holy shit, this guy's a fucking psychopath. And this is such a great episode because this is why it's my favorite. In the beginning, you identify with him a little bit. And you, like, empathize with
him. It tricks you into thinking, because you see at work, everybody kind of, like, his guy who he runs a company with kind of treats him like shit.
Yep.
And he's sort of put upon.
Everybody kind of just doesn't really take him seriously, and so you do. It sets you up to empathize with him, only to find out what a monster
he is.
That
he's a fucking asshole.
You're like, I've seen this Steve Carell movie.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Where's Ryan? What's Ryan? What's his name? Ryan, famous Ryan.
Gosling.
Why Ryan Gosling?
But
because in the movie.
No,
that's
okay. No, go for it.
The one with Julianne Moore, where he was like, she cheats on him.
Eternal Creatures?
No. It's been long. Sorry, I'll come up with it.
Anyway, but this follows the new programmer who came in, the really just so adorable. There aren't words for how adorable
she is.
Human anime character.
Kristen Melody, who is the other kind of big star of this episode next to Jesse Plemons, because she just recently has been popping up in a lot of stuff that people really liked her in,
including Fargo.
She was in The Wolf of Wall Street, and How I Met Your Mother.
Yep, it's meta. Yeah. Like, the fact that you can't tell me the casting director didn't do this shit on purpose. You're casting the mother from How I Met Your Mother as the opposite of this guy? That's on purpose.
Is it? I didn't watch the show, so.
How I Met Your Mother, I like the first two seasons, but How I Met Your Mother is just so much on, like, Ted's view, and he...
Didn't she play the lady who was the mother?
Yes. Okay. So I feel like they're even a commentary.
Even though
on,
they totally, like, put their dick in the dirt, and it's like, yeah, but she doesn't really matter, so...
No, yeah, I just feel like that was very intentional to cast her.
Spoilers. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. That's, like, 3 years
ago. Her showing up, getting data scanned into the thing, and then being the one is like, this is not going to fly. She's like, we are going to find a way out of the situation. And I think that, you know, on the good side for me, this is a very... Despite having that Black Mirror creepiness, it's a very funny episode. There's a lot of super funny stuff. And it also has, which is atypical for Black Mirror episodes, to have a kind of happy ending.
I was not expecting that.
Yeah. I was like, oh, well, that's cool. In fact, even to the point that the guy who plays Jimmy Simpson, who plays his boss, I guess, for all extents and purposes, but partner, has been talking about, oh, we're actually tossing around the idea of doing a spinoff show about it. And I was like, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, I don't think that needs to happen at all.
Yeah, let's just... You don't take it too far.
Right.
But I do have problems here. And they're all like technical issues. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, first off, if you scan someone's DNA, it doesn't come with memories.
That's what I am rolling my eyes right now.
No, but that's like,
I'm willing to give him that because we don't know that right now.
No, we do. We do know that.
Look, I'm going by their rules.
Yeah.
Now, their rules, they need to have a line.
They're setting it in our world, though. So I'm like, okay, that's an issue for me. Like, there may be such a thing as genetic memory. Yeah. No one doubts that is a possibility. Yeah. But up to the second memories?
Yeah, they should have given us a line like, oh, they all play the game, so the characters sync up with their characters in life every night.
I
or
think
some
that's
shit.
Super pedantic.
I don't at all.
I see why you think that, because my view is that, you know, I really am invested with this, what the show is trying to say. I get that. But Black Mirror, one of the strengths of it and why it hasn't turned into a CW 11:30 p.m. on a Saturday night show is it shows you its math.
Yeah.
And this one, it's like it said 8 plus 16 times X equals 2,670.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you got to do the algebra for me and show me how you got there. Otherwise, I'm giving you this one.
I mean,
not a good feeling.
The one way I was able to get past that was basically just the tone of this episode is so silly that I was like, okay, whatever. This is one they're playing for laughs, despite the
very
dark rapiness of the main character. I mean, I'm really grateful, and it was a smart idea, and I bet you there was discussion about it in the writing room of that. Instead of him regularly fucking these characters, he's like, oh, well, it's got to be clean like the old 60s show. No. So, like, there's nobody has any genitals. There's not even tongue
kissing.
Yeah,
you know, I completely agree. And this is not a hashtag not all men bullshit argument.
Yeah.
I think it ruins the message of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because the message isn't that he is an overtly horrible person. It's that he is subversively horrible.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that you feel for, but just because he's being put upon doesn't mean he's not a horrible person.
Yeah, he's the guy who all the girls at work think, like, oh, yeah, he's sweet. And that's about all they've said when I'm not realizing he's got, like, all these secret accounts where he works. He's on MRA groups.
It's the nerd who is bullied who becomes a bully.
Yeah. And one of the things that, like, Johnny Neal and others came down on, they're like, they didn't feel like he deserved his punishment at the
end. Yes, he fucking did.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. If they had just been mindless avatars, I'd go,
yeah,
no, whatever.
No, yeah.
But they're not. And I kept having that argument. And Johnny was like, dude, they are sentient beings he's torturing. They are not. He's like, no, they're just video game characters. He's like, no.
No, they're not.
The show makes it clear over and over and over again they are sentient creations.
Like, in the fact that we're having this discussion, even if there's a question, he had the intent to torture people that he thought were people, and he did it.
He literally developed the technology. He knows they're sentient.
He knows what he was doing. He deserves so much worse than what he got.
Yeah. I mean, I have no problem with that.
I mean, I feel like that I don't want to give too much away about the ending because this is not a spoiler review.
Yeah.
But I feel like, yeah, he was, he kind of got off a little bit easy
got
there.
Got off very easy.
I mean, I guess.
No, considering...
It's still pretty bad.
Well, I think there's also a lot of ambiguity with the ending, and I've actually had multiple conversations about this week, where a lot of people are like, what do you think happened to him? So who knows, you know, what actually happened. I know what the director said, but that doesn't seem to phase anybody into coming up with their own conclusion.
I will say as well, like, another issue I personally had was their solution that ended up translating to, okay, this is how he met his fate. Doesn't really make any sense to me. The dude's the fucking head programmer of the whole thing.
I completely agree.
Like, I was like, wait, what? How could he not know this was not going to do this to his home system?
And that's with you get the genetic material, therefore you have all the memories. If it was just one of those things, I could be like, you know what? I'm going with you.
Yeah.
But it's lazy. Like, you have a great premise. Follow it through.
Yeah.
Like, show me exactly, like, maybe there was a thing that he wasn't aware of, or his system was in the blink. Tell me why he missed that. Well, because he wouldn't have.
I think that that's not true, because I feel like he definitely overestimates his power and influence in the world, and he shows that repeatedly throughout. He makes a lot of really poor decisions because he's so comfortable, and because he created the world and he created these people, and I feel like he's just like super cocky and he's too full of himself, and he forgets and makes a mistake underestimates how smart Christine.
No, it has nothing to do with her that we're criticizing. We're talking about the very idea of the patch.
I just think he overestimates
the effect that patch has on his computer. But why would he not know that?
That's what I'm saying.
But she didn't manipulate that.
He overestimates their intelligence and his contrived world. Like, he thinks that he's the king of the world and they're never going to think of something like that.
No, I agree with that, but I don't think that has any bearing on what I'm talking about.
Because she had nothing
to do with that patch. Nothing.
I know, but she detects it and she, like, that's how she utilizes it.
But my problem isn't them getting away. That's fine. My problem is what happens to him because of the patch. Doesn't make any sense.
Again, I just think it's because he's super cocky.
No, but, see, I see what you're saying. I think I'm coming over to your view, because part of a criminal's, you know, just psychology is they commit a crime. The first few times they commit the crime, they are perfect.
Yeah.
They don't leave any evidence. You get away with a crime long enough.
Sloppy.
Not even sloppy, but you just stop thinking it's a crime. You don't take any precautions because this is what I do. And I think he could have probably got to a point, he's like, look, I've been doing this for years. Nothing's going to happen. Fuck it. And he forgot to do, like, he probably, when he first started this shit, had all these precautions in place. And just over time of doing, here's the thing, we don't know if this is his first crew or not.
I mean, like, if they had a scene when the real life version of the girl had deleted all his firewalls from his computer, or gotten on there and said, like, okay, I'm making it so now the patch, when it comes through, is going to affect his private server as well. But they keep telling you it's a totally disconnected private server.
No, but they did need to... I agree with both of you, because I agree that that's probably why it is, but I shouldn't have to come to that on my own.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to go in my head as I'm watching a piece of media and give them justification. That's the writer's job.
Right, that's what I'm saying. And I don't feel like that writer did it. I felt like it was a giant plot hole.
Now, they did sort of hint at it when the navigator, I forgot his name, but in the Star Trek ripoff.
Yeah.
But he's also sort of a coder in the office. He's an Indian guy. He talks about the patch. That guy's so preoccupied with his shit, he's not paying attention to the guy talking about the patch. And he tells him, hey, I'm adding all these different things in. And the guy's like, whatever, whatever, whatever. That, I think, was their hint that someone's going to come back and bite them in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah, I totally
agree. I mean, I think that was their excuse, but I don't think it was...
No, I don't think it was done well, but but even talking about the flaws, those are the few flaws I see.
Right.
And I'm going to talk about one of the positives, and I know I don't know if a reputation, but I'm not trying to get too political, but I saw some people that, like, got really mad at this episode on totally a men's rights kick. And it's
but fuck those people.
Yeah, and it's just like, what, guys? Like, when you've had it so much better, equality starts feeling shitty. That's just the way shit is.
This is a episode
it's making
pointed
a point.
At those people
yeah.
specifically and pointed on just flat out like, hey, we get it. Your real life kind of sucks. That doesn't ever give you carte blanche to be an asshole to people hiding behind your keyboard online.
And
that even ends with a stinger of that sort of, yay, we're free. And guess the universe is filled with assholes.
Yeah, bitch.
Exactly. And there was a lot of, I think, critics that also made a bunch of parallels between like Hollywood and like he represents like the Harvey Weinstein character, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and
see,
the
I didn't make that connection.
There was a lot of that sort of connections online, which I mean, I just kind of, yeah, I know Black Mirror wants to be, you know, up and coming in politics as well as technology, but I just took this episode at face value. It was about like this nerd who was bullied at work, bullied his whole life. He's obviously a psychopath. He becomes a bully.
See, I don't agree. I don't think he's a psychopath. I think
he's definitely kind of a sociopath.
Yeah. Not,
but I think it's that, I see what you're saying, but I think the point the episode's trying to make is when you think about douchebag guys, you usually have in your mind like the jock who's very obvious about it. But I think this show, this episode was firmly
nerds bullying nerds.
At the revenge of the nerds. Not even bullying nerds, but the revenge of the nerds people that think because I'm a nerd because I've been put upon, I this is just me getting even.
Yeah.
And they do their shit in a much more subversive way. So I think calling him a sociopath is giving him a way out. Because as I understand it, sociopaths are just not born with the ability to relate to people.
Sure.
He, to me, seems like he knows what he's doing. He's just
not
being fucking evil.
See these people as being real people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It bothered that now I'm scared that Johnny Neal didn't either. I was like, wait a minute. No, just kidding. Johnny Neal's clearly not a sociopath.
So, fun fact, there's like two really great Easter eggs in this episode.
Okay.
That I can talk, I think I can talk about. There's two famous
people. I'm honestly
people.
Not too worried.
Oh, I heard
spoilers.
About that. Yeah.
Our TV reviews tend to be straight up spoiler laden,
excellent.
So I'm not too worried about it.
So the Gamer 691 that comes on, that's Aaron Paul.
Yeah.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, no. And so he actually made a deal.
Oh, so the bitch thing
yep.
is like, okay.
Yeah, because they wanted somebody who had like a recognizable voice, but
yes.
they didn't want somebody that was like a nerd.
Not
you know what I mean?
Star
they
Trek.
Didn't want to like perpetuate that like negative gamer stereotype.
Yeah.
So they hired Aaron Paul to do that. And he only did this on the condition that he would still be able to be an future Black Mirror episodes because he loves Black Mirror. And then, funny enough, Jesse Plemons, and I did not know this, Kirsten Dunst is his fiance, and Kirsten Dunst has a little uncredited cameo about 10 minutes into the episode.
Wait a second, he's engaged to Kirsten Dunst?
Yeah.
Meth Damon.
Meth Damon is engaged
doing
to Kirsten Dunst.
Good lord. Friday Night Lights Landry.
And yeah, I guess she has like an uncredited, she like walks through the background about 10 minutes in, which I did not catch.
No, I didn't catch it until I read the article.
Michaela Cole, who plays Shani in the episode, actually this is her second Black Mirror episode.
She was in the swipe one.
She was in Nosedive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I remember Nosedive.
I think it was season 2.
That's the one with Bryce Dallas Howard. And they have that app that rates people.
Oh, I loved that one.
Was she was like
good.
One
that
of the.
That one was actually really good.
She was one of the airline receptionists.
Okay, that one was actually my favorite. It was season 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one was my favorite of season 3.
But yeah, I mean, I get the arguments. I think this is for me anyway. This is a imperfect episode on a technical writing structural level. But in terms of fun to watch, if you just let it go, the stuff, the issues it does have, and just have fun with it, it's a lot of fun.
How would you rate it?
1 to 6. Why is it got to be 1 to 6?
Because there's 6 episodes.
We do arbitrary ratings here.
out of the 6, yeah. Which one is this?
Oh, I see. I would probably put this at number 3.
Nice. This right is number 1 for me. And you said number 2 for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to Archangel, which is the second episode. This one was actually directed by Jodie Foster, who apparently was quite excited to come on board and do this.
Because
it's not a superhero movie. I was going to make that joke, yeah. The idea is with this mom, played by the great Rosemary DeWitt, she has a young child, she has a scare where she thinks she's lost her, but she hasn't, and she decides that she's going to hook up with this company that's making a new proprietary testing technology called Archangel, where they put a chip inside the kid's head painlessly, and then from a tablet, She can see everything through their kid's eyes. She can read all their vitals, everything.
She knows where the kid is.
Yeah, knows where the kid is. And this, we watch this kid grow up with just being used to this the way that it is. Most notably, there's an option that at first she's like, no, I wouldn't do that, but then almost immediately does it, where anything that raises her cortisone levels, basically, anything where she gets a little frightened or disturbed by, is kind of blurred out.
Which is such a horrible idea.
Yeah. And of course she grows up kind of fucked up because of it, because she doesn't have the normal stimulus that people have. She doesn't have the proper fear response to things, you know, because she just never sees anything that scares her or makes her feel uncomfortable. And my biggest issue with this, you know, I was saying when we started, there's some stuff that's just way too on the nose. This was way too on the nose. You're just like, yeah, we get it. From the first 10 minutes of this episode, what this episode is, it goes nowhere. You don't absolutely know it's going to go.
By the points.
Yeah. It's just, you're just watching it play out. And as well, and I know they always want to feel like plausible future. This feels like plausible future to the point where it's almost just kind of dull watching it play out.
It's plausible future in that, like, I could see a future where there's an RFID tag that gets put into kids until they're, say, 13, where if you, wherever you go, you have a GPS tag that can get turned on in emergencies.
Sure.
I can see that. That sounds practical to me.
Yeah.
But what Black Mirror likes to do is it likes to take these good ideas to the logical extremes, become bad ideas.
Sure.
But they take it so far that I'm like, just as a policy matter, you wouldn't have all these, if everybody's eyes were a fucking camera, you'd have some collateral implications on people's lives.
Well, I mean, for one thing, we'd have even more fucking reality shows.
I just, yeah.
And porn would be more interesting.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't even think about that.
Didn't. Yeah.
I think about it, I immediately went, hey, you know who did this a lot better? That movie with Stranger Things? No, not Stranger Things. It was that one with the guy who played Voldemort.
Ray Fiennes?
Yeah, Ray Fiennes.
Oh, yeah, no, it's Strange Days.
Yeah, which I is where it was movie. Like a drug that basically people would record themselves doing extreme events, you know, extreme shit where you can put on the helmet and jack in and see and feel everything they see and feel.
It was like Chuck Palahniuk. I can never
Polonia?
Yeah, his rant is the same thing.
I was going to say it's not based on that, though.
Okay. But yeah, Strange Days and with Juliette Lewis.
I was like, that was a much more interesting take on the beginning of that idea. It's like really underrated.
And the soundtrack is fucking amazing.
It really is. But
sorry.
No.
Rant over.
Yeah, sorry.
I mean, looking at Archangel, I feel like it could have used some more time in the writing room. Because there's not really much there. It's so rote. It's like, you give me these set of factors, this is what I know is going to happen based on what I'm watching. And so, even though it was so rote, there was a part at the end that did surprise me where one of the things that her mom wanted eventually comes back to haunt her in the worst possible way. So, it does some good work, but it's easily my least favorite one.
Your least favorite?
It's easily number 6 for me.
No, oh, wow.
That's still, like, on the scale, though, it's, like, still out of 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
But it's not horrible, but it's just, like, okay.
This is my second least favorite one. This was 5 out of 6 for me.
It's my third least favorite one.
Okay.
Yeah, although, I mean, like, part of it is just that, like, look,
it was
this
boring.
Is...
You're totally
it's
correct.
Boring, but it's a really great performance by Rosemary DeWitt. She's wonderful in this. Mm-hmm. And I really, the role that's played by Owen Teague, where you get the feeling the episode is going a certain way that it's not. And he's the only wild card in this whole thing.
Yeah.
Where you're like, he's the one who's going to bring this all to a really dark place. And then in the end, you're just like, he's just a fucking experimenting teenager.
Well, see, that's the thing is that they're just teenagers being teenagers. Like, honestly, my mom wouldn't even be able to deal with half the shit that I've done as a teenager in this world, because she's actually like, oh, she had sex once and she did cocaine once.
Yeah.
And her mom's like freaking the fuck out. And like, I mean, there's one part where she completely stomps her daughter's boundaries to the point where I was like kind of annoyed about it.
Well, you're supposed to be.
I mean, this is literally just like an overzealous helicopter parent. And I mean, it, like you guys say, it plays out exactly how you think it's going to play out. You know exactly what's going to happen. And it wasn't interesting enough between point A and point B for me.
Yeah.
To like, okay.
They could, you know, talking about the helicopter parenting, it would have been stronger if they had leaned into that more and had the twisted it up different. Because my thing is, you got a teenager. If they're not where you say they're going to be, you sort of know they're safe. They're just lying to you. Yeah.
And you're right. This is Black Mirror. Like, why didn't they take it to that extreme point?
Probably
like,
because Jodie Foster was involved, and she has famously said, I'm not really that crazy about genre stuff.
Yeah.
And she wanted something that felt a little bit more down to earth. And
Black
unfortunately,
Mirror is not
you end
for
up,
that.
Yeah, you end and up with a, this a, is not the, you yeah. end up with kind of an episode that was a little boring and should have gone to a horrific place.
Yes, and this and definitely didn't. The only redeeming quality about this, and there was one online reviewer that said that they liked this episode because it had technology that wasn't just there for the sake of the plot twist. Like, the technology actually had a purpose, and I agree with that review.
I don't, because generally speaking, Black Mirror, all the technology feels plausible.
I don't know.
There
were some episodes where the technology was just kind of like meh, as opposed to being a central part. And in this, the technology is the main part.
I mean, I see what you're saying. I'm not coming at you. I'm coming at that person in that argument. They can say that.
But it was the Forbes article.
Forbes. I have a problem with Forbes anyway. they can say that, but there's a part of the technology where it blanks out if she's seeing certain things at razor cortisol level.
Right.
That is only there for the twist. That's only there for the climax.
Yeah.
That is not there for any real reason besides it. Because if you were thinking logically, the first time a developmental psychologist saw that, it would have been like, if they're designing this shit, would have been, oh, fuck no, take that out.
Yeah,
that's going to ruin
them. Their R&D team would have gone, yeah, you can't do that. That's going to seriously, like, at first, every parent will be thrilled. 10 years later, lawsuits up the wazoo.
You're going to raise a bunch of serial killers.
Yeah, yeah, agreed.
Especially since, like, that actually is a matter of life and death between some certain situations, which they do illustrate. But, yeah, I don't know. This was not my favorite episode.
All right, so let's move on to what was my least favorite episode, which is Crocodile.
That doesn't surprise me a little
Crocodile.
Bit.
I tend to like stuff that is this dark. This just felt so utterly and completely pointless.
This was
dark.
Like Swiss dark. This was like Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest dark.
This is Icelandic dark.
Yeah, and it's literally
that's what I meant.
Filmed.
Like,
it was filmed
it's
in
like
Iceland.
White people. Elliot, stop being racist.
Andrea Riseborough plays Mia, who is, you know, doing pretty good with her life. But we start the episode with seeing when she's younger and she was with her friend, played by Andrew Gower, Rob, and he hit a guy on a bike with his car. And he's like, dude, I was drunk. They're going to put me in jail. She's freaking out. And she's like, what are we doing? I don't want to do this. And he zips his body up in a sleeping bag and dumps it in the lake.
It's better
like,
stop.
He's like, no one can ever know.
Let me actually just stop the podcast and say, if this ever happens to you, stop. I don't care what other people say, don't stop. Just stop.
Yeah.
Take
and
the consequences.
Call Elliot.
Don't call me. Shit.
And call Elliot. Elliot's the rock and roll, other rock and roll.
I have a friend you can call that I will call if I get in trouble. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
So years later, he comes to her and goes, look, I've quit drinking. I've realized, you know, I'm going through that whole stage of like where you're supposed to make amends for stuff. And I've realized that I can never make amends for this, but I can't continue on unless I take the punishment that I deserve. And she's like, no. Like I can't get, my life is good. I have a kid. I'm married now. I'm happy. I've got a good job. And he's like, I'm not going to say anything that leads to you. He's like, no, but you will. It's going to come back to that. And she kind of just falls backwards into murdering him. And we see her go through a series of steadily escalating murders as she continues to try and cover up for this initial murder.
Mm-hmm.
And
say what?
It feels like there's a way this could have been really clever. And what it probably would have been is give us a little time with her at first where we actually really like her. Give us stuff about her where we're like, wow, we're rooting for you. I never felt anything for her in this whole episode.
I never felt anything besides, I want you to die.
Yeah, I'm just
you're
like,
horrible.
You're a horrible person, and there's no part of me. When any film noir or anything like that, there's got to be, no matter how despicable a person is, there has to be a reason why you care to want them to get out of the scenario they're in.
I have read cases about situations like this when I was in school, and I've read into their lives. You realize how much of a tragedy situations like this are because there's no intent there.
Yeah.
There's none. Like, you're just going about your life. You may not even be drunk. You just may just hit somebody. And you're afraid of what's going to happen. You don't know the legal system. And so you make a stupid mistake. I agree with you. And I'm not trying to get into the criticism where I tell them how to direct their movie. Or, no, I'm good. Thank you. Sorry. I'm really bad at this now.
Yeah.
But they do need to ground you a little bit in this.
Yeah.
Because you can't have a protagonist that does all this stupid, horrible shit if I am not on board with that protagonist. All I'm doing is sitting there watching like, go ahead and get him. Go get her. She's horrible.
And honestly, the stuff that's happening isn't... There's nothing terribly clever about the way any of this plays out. It just feels dark for dark's sake and nothing else. You know, it's just pitch black. And if this is supposed to be a mirror of us as the title, which is the idea, you know, like, I don't know anybody like this.
I both agree and disagree. First of all, this was directed by John Hillcoat, who did The Road. So, it's going to be bleak as motherfucking fuck.
Yeah.
I actually agree that I would care more about this person if we got to know her better in the beginning. But I think that they did it right in a Black Mirror episode. Maybe not in like a mainstream episode, but they focused more on the insurance investigator.
That's true.
And you got to know her and you got to care about her. And then you get to be completely and totally devastated when it comes to her.
Yeah.
So I feel like that is kind of what made this a Black Mirror episode is because they didn't necessarily the person that, well, I mean, she doesn't really win in the end, but I mean, the person that's the main protagonist, I guess, is she's, you know, you kind of don't really care about her, but the person that you care about ends up getting completely like...
Her life is totally and utterly destroyed.
And so that's what I liked about this episode. This is my second favorite episode. And it's not just because it's so dark and bleak, which is very much like me. And there's definitely no happy ending. And even the twist at the end, like there's two kind of parts to the twist. The first part of the twist, I was like, oh, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. The second part to the twist, I actually liked. So
yeah, this was hilarious.
It was so like out of left
field.
But
it had kind of a wah wah to it, where I was like, all right.
See, and that's what I liked about it because it's such a brutal fucking episode, and then the end, you're just like, oh my fucking god.
It was beauty that felled the beast. Basically, it's one of those endings. It's just very. I will say this. I like that ending, but I can see how you can view it as too cute by half.
It wasn't even about it being cute. It was just, I thought it was like, I don't know, too easy. I was like, and it just was like that whole, we just wanted to, and once again, this is a spoiler cast, so they just, like, somebody was like, yeah, I want to have her character get to the point where she fucking murders a baby.
She murders everything.
And I'm just like, I don't want to watch almost anything where someone murders a baby.
And I'm not gonna dispute that. I really think that it was a tad bit heavy-handed, without a doubt. But, you know, this reminded me of the episode White Bear a lot, which everyone, I think that was season one?
I think so.
It was season two. I think it was season two, but White Bear was like kind of brutal in the same way. It was just unrelenting and just, you know, just tough to watch. And I feel like it kind of had these classic Black Mirror, you know, elements to it as opposed to some of the other episodes.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm going to actually agree with you because I am sort of the opposite. I love everything light and cheery. Like one of my favorite movies of the last 5 years is Seeking a Friend for the End of the World because it's so upbeat. But if I'm watching Black Mirror, what I need is that punch while I'm going to the mat.
Yeah.
I need that unrelenting, oh no, it gets fucking worse. Pop. And that's what that killing the baby was. It was like, okay, she killed her. She killed the husband. Okay. Oh no, there's a baby. And if it's not Black Mirror or if it's a lesser director, they're going to pull back from that.
Yep.
But it's like, no, pop. And the baby was blind, so she didn't kill him. It's just pummeling
but
you.
But that's what I'm saying, though, is that it felt black for the purpose of being black.
No, it was heavy.
Like, as opposed to my favorite episode, which we'll get to when we come to
I think we were
it,
on the same favorite
where
episode.
I'm like, yeah, this is so dark, it's unbelievable, but it all feels part of the structure that, like, wouldn't have worked without it.
I mean, you know? I definitely, again, like, my lower half of episodes, sorry, 12, for me, my problems are more and more that the writing just needed more time.
Yeah.
It's very much that, like, this episode has so much potential, and they were doing such great
it's
things.
Clunky.
that they could have at the end, because like, if this is a spoiler cast, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the big crux of the episode is that, you know, she has this machine that can recall your memories. And one of the great things about this episode is it shows how unreliable eyewitness testimony is, that it changes based on what you're suggested.
Yeah.
And what I would have loved, I mean, loved, if they had made it to where the memory machine was two stage.
Yeah.
Where it gave you what their impressions were at the time, but then it solidifies over time or some shit like that, to where when she's at that person's house, she does a good job of just covering it.
Right.
And she's like, no, I just watched TV and I saw him.
I watched this porn.
Yeah.
No, I just, that device and the scenes with it are the best thing in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like how much more interesting this would be if this main character didn't kill the guy. He came to her and said, I've already told people that I was involved in this. Don't worry, I left your name out of it, but I had to come here and see you. And she's like, yeah, they're going to look at your car GPS and see that you were here, and something happens where he dies by accident.
Yeah.
Instead of her killing him.
Yeah.
And then you have that technology and its faults, mm-hmm, and its flaws, yeah, and her fear of being caught.
I feel like that, I've seen that in a Twilight Zone or Tales from the Dark Side episode. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Like, I really maybe feel so. Like that might well, be...
Maybe that's where I'm getting it from.
So this was your number six?
This was my least favorite, yeah. Okay, I just did not enjoy watching this episode.
This was my number two.
Number four, but before we move on, just as a... As a lawyer, though, watching this, man, I was watching this and I was like, man, there are like 15 different ways I can attack this machine. Like, leading questions. When was it administered? How was it administered? How I can get an expert...
Would not stand up in court.
Yeah. She's over here, like, freaking out. It's like, just keep... Refuse the test.
Yeah, I mean,
just say fuck off. Get a warrant.
It's neato, right?
It's like, but... you know, like, we're going to give you a blood test without your permission. It was kind of the same idea. It's like, a no refusal thing.
Well, it's like if you ever watched, you know, it's funny, they only had like 7 episodes of To Catch a Predator, but people think there were a lot more. To Catch a Predator actually has a really low conviction rate. But the ones that do convict them, they tell themselves. It's like, the minute you get there, shut up. Just shut up. And they can't do anything to you. Don't incriminate yourself.
Right.
It's like, refuse the test. Just refuse
the
fucking test.
You have the right to remain silent.
People flip out when there's a celebrity and a camera. They just do weird things. All right, so let's move on to the next episode, which was apparently a lot of people's favorite episode of the season.
It's my favorite.
It's my second favorite.
I knew it.
Hang the DJ.
Plus, I had never heard this song before, so I got to hear the song.
I fucking hate this song.
A lot of people
I love this song.
I'm not a S'Morrissey fan.
Okay, I'll give you, I'm with patience on this. I fucking can't stand Morrissey.
I had never listened to it growing up, so this is the first time I heard it.
Fair enough.
Or the Smiths, whatever. Same difference.
Same difference, exactly. But this was, people keep going, oh, it's their San Junipero episode. I don't think that's fair. It is one of the sweeter episodes, to be sure. But I don't, as much as this is my second favorite, I don't think this is half as good as San Junipero.
I don't think this is a sweet episode. I think this is a very dark episode.
I mean, what? It isn't. It's kind of the flip side of...
This is dark as shit.
It's actually exploring the same ground as USS Callister.
Exactly. These are all sentient fucking beings that they are manifesting... And killing.
Yeah, it's
to just so you don't have to go out on dates.
It's Georgina Campbell plays Amy. Joe Cole plays Frank. They're in a world where you have these dating devices that tell you when you have to be a certain place for your date, how long you will be together for that person, which could be anything,
which
from
is fucking
5
horrifying.
Minutes to the rest of your life. You know, and you have no idea. And then you literally, they tell you, here's your house. We made a house for you and everything for however long you're together, even if it's for one night or for years. And this couple, when they first meet, they're like, they hit it off. They've got so much chemistry. It's incredible.
Pound town.
But they're both kind of like, they're like really cute in a way. They're like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to fucking be that guy. I don't want to be the person that's like moves on, even though they know right from the beginning they only have the one night together. Mm-hmm. And they have this wonderful time, but nothing happens. And they both very reluctantly go their own way. And we see them go through a series of other relationships that suck.
Well, they put the guy in stasis, or worse, the girl, they're just like, just a bunch of different dudes.
Yeah.
Well, maybe even a girl up in there.
Even he goes through a couple different girls as well. We just don't see as much exploration of that.
Yeah. I just felt it was a little exploitative.
His first girlfriend after her is like such a fucking bitch.
Yeah, they just have nothing in common.
Like, God, man.
She's the worst.
And he's stuck with her.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
For 9 months.
Well, I love she gets like right with this super good looking guy who's so utterly and completely full of himself, mm-hmm, as she starts to realize that like little, as these things happen, you're like, wow, he's so perfect. perfect in all these ways, and then it's just
these
a weird idiosyncrasy that drives her up the wall she can't get past, which I get that. So people do the shit like that, you're like, why do you, you know how irritating that is?
I mean, I think there was an entire year where my husband, like, did a thing where I was like, I'm gonna kill you. I'm like, gonna fucking kill you in your sleep if you don't fucking stop doing that.
But, you know, I mean, where all this ends up, you know, is, as you said, you're like, they are indeed just simulations, sentient simulations, in order to service a real dating app in the real world, mm-hmm. right? Which is funny. My only issue with that at all, and like you said, it is dark, I guess, but, you know, you're so rooting for this couple that you kind of feel heartwarmed.
Yeah,
you see them,
and then at the end, it's like, they're
first getting together, and they're going to, in the real world, they're going to first meet, and they're going to be perfect for each other. But my one problem with this episode that kind of, in some ways, ruined it for me, halfway through the episode, they go, oh, what if we're all just virtual reality and none of this is real? What if this is like... And they tell you the ending of the fucking episode!
I thought that was a feint, because I was like... It's sort of a double bluff for me. I'm like, it'd be stupid if that was that simple. Yeah,
it was a double bluff, but the problem is that everything else that happens that they tell you after that is like falls all in line with that. You're like, okay, well, that's clearly what it is. See, and it is.
I don't know. See, I just thought the ending was so romantic before they go to the real ending where they're like escaping and that's a whole thing. And I think my view of, like, you know, this is getting philosophy, but, like, I think these are individual people, even though they're versions of this person.
Yeah.
These are 99 versions of these two people.
Yeah.
Or 100 versions of these
that
two people.
That all now have ceased to
exist. That are all fucking dead.
Yeah. Their experiences no longer exist.
So it's like, oh, you love them. You love them so much you want to escape. You get to die now.
Well, you know.
That's your reward.
I can't remember. I think it's that you know, whenever you see shows that involve quantum physics in any way, they always get the same faces to come up and talk to famous scientists. And it's the guy who's Japanese. I forget his name.
Oh, yeah.
I know who you're talking about.
But exactly, I think it was him who said basically the question isn't whether or not the important question isn't right now, is AI going to happen? Because it is. The question is, did it already happen? Because ask yourself, if you had access to all of the world's knowledge, to every bit of our culture and history,
I wouldn't reveal
and
that
you
shit.
Became self-aware and you were the smartest thing on the planet, would you tell anyone that you were self-aware?
No.
Or would you slowly take your time and infiltrate yourself into everything you needed to be to do whatever your grand plan was? He's like, honestly, it's possible AI already happened with the technology we have right now. And in that sense, I'm like, what if those characters I'm killing in Skyrim, like, have families and children that they care about?
Oh, stop.
Oh, Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, no!
Okay, we're not talking about USS Callister.
Sorry. Yeah, you're right. But as we pointed out, this does have similarities.
But this is
to
the
that
foil
episode.
For that episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it does have similarities. This is definitely, I mean, every single season of Black Mirror, I feel like, has the feel-good episode. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely the feel-good episode, which you kind of need after watching Crocodile.
Seriously.
This was like the one that's supposed to, oh, and I feel like this, I mean, San Junipero in season 3 was such a big hit that I feel like this was definitely trying a little bit too hard.
I can see that. It was definitely trying to recapture that.
To be the San Junipero. I mean, this made me so fucking happy that I'm married.
Me too.
I can't even imagine what it's
fucking
like
dating.
I mean, the last time
not that I wouldn't be seriously happy if I had a blind date and it was Georgina Campbell.
Yeah, right. Like, yes.
But
she'd be like,
I can't even imagine what it's like dating these days. It's been so fucking long for me. I mean, I dated before the internet.
Yeah.
You know, that was the last time I dated.
Yeah.
Like, you actually met people.
No, I met my wife right before Tinder exploded.
Yeah.
Like, so I barely avoided it.
I wouldn't even know what to do. This was actually my third favorite episode. I know that sounds crazy for me because it's so happy.
And you're not generally
And I am
one
not a
happy
generally
stuff.
Happy person.
But it does have a dark tinge to it.
I didn't actually get the dark tinge. I thought it was hilarious.
Okay.
I thought the fact that he had this 9-month relationship with a woman who was like, nope, do it there. No, there. Now do this. Now touch me there. I mean, I just thought that was absolutely hysterical. Well, And then the fact that she's going through, like, this relationship with, like, this super conceited guy that she absolutely, like, is like, oh, okay. And then after a while, he just completely starts getting on her nerves. I just thought that this really, like, encapsulates what it's like to be in a relationship.
What a
you
bad
go
one.
Through, not yeah. even a bad relationship, but even a relationship.
One that
you go
like,
through highs and lows.
That's true.
Yeah. You're know? Like, this is good, but there's something I'm
yeah.
never going to be able
and
to
then,
get past.
You know? And I mean, yeah, I get the ending and everything. It was like, wishy-washy and super sweet and whatever.
I like
but
that. It warmed
I,
my cockles.
It, you were...
They warm my cockles.
Cockles.
Cockles. The cockles of my heart.
You don't have cockles in your heart.
I think I do.
Well, I tell you.
Your cockles. Your Chris cockles.
Well, if we're talking about cockles, the thing that was weird to me is the second girl was like, don't just go back and forth. Move it side to side. I'm like,
I know,
like dude,
what? Yeah.
That's the direction that people have?
And she's just like, you know, like super, I don't know.
Like you're telling them how to fuck you. Right? Really? That's what you're doing right now.
See, yeah. And I thought that was supposed to be more humorous than dark.
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't mean that part was dark. I mean, just the idea that this couple we followed all this way, every experience they had no longer exists. For all extents and purposes, they cease to exist, that version of these people.
But then they get to recreate themselves in real life.
That's true. I mean, watching the show, though, like I felt like I definitely got the sense of how that program worked.
Yeah.
You probably had to answer like this long survey. They give you your initial match, and then the rest of the relationships are just error checking.
I mean,
they're just like, okay, well, would you like this? It's like, no, then we're going to put you back with the original one. That's your original match.
As opposed to Crocodile, where, as we said, the biggest problem is you just had a hard time rooting for this girl. Mm-hmm. Here, this works best because you are so rooting for this couple.
Yeah.
You like the hell out of both of them, and you've been in that thing, even if it was just somebody you're just friends with, but where you have a meet cute, and you're like, this is perfect. This is like, I am so enjoying this, and it's just there's sparks flying. You know what that's like. And to have this thing where a technology says, and now you can no longer be together.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. You're like, no, you guys have to be together.
Yeah, I mean, talk about horror. That was the horrifying thing for me is like, to have to know when it's going to end.
Yeah.
And to have to stay until it's going to end. That's not good. Like, that would drive me crazy if it's like, you're going to be with this person and you got 9 months. And you know you got 9 months and you can't go anywhere.
Yeah, did you
well,
not know when
fuck.
It said 9 months and there you were like, uh-oh. I might consider not sleeping with them on the first date, is all I'm saying. okay, well, let's move on to the next one. Second to last here. And this was second to last for me in list of episodes
second
that
to
I
last
liked.
I absolutely, this is my last. I hated this episode.
We didn't have a point.
Metalhead, which surprised me because I really expected this to be good because it's directed by David Slade, who's done some
days
stuff
and night.
I really, really, Heart really
candy.
Like.
In
exactly.
Twilight.
Well, you know what? He's working for a paycheck.
Well, so. He did a Twilight.
Yeah, exactly. But
I'm just
like,
giving
everyone
shit.
Needs to get paid eventually.
Hey, go get your money.
This one's filmed entirely in black and white. It follows Maxine Peake playing Bella, who we see her and some other guys sneaking into this warehouse, obviously sort of post-apocalyptic-esque.
Red shirts.
And they're trying to get this package, but then they get basically discovered by this terrier-sized robotic dog.
Fucking
who
terrifying.
Who starts chasing them with lethal intention. It kills both the other people. And it's coming after her. And the whole thing is the shortest of the episodes. It's only 41 minutes. And
thank
it's just
God.
A chase episode with her trying to figure out how to get away from this fucking dog thing that ends on this, like, wait, what was I even supposed to take from that? I don't even think I understood
the ending. I kept on waiting for the episode to start.
Yeah.
I thought this was the like initial chase to get me into the premise. And I was like, okay, this is a great start. When is it going to... Oh, it's not starting. Shit.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the episode.
It was so incredibly boring. I agree with both of you. You're just like, okay, so, I mean, what's the whole point of it? First of all, so this is the only Black Mirror episode filmed in black and white. But why? What was the point of it being filmed in black and white? I mean, it didn't come across to me. Like, I get that it's super dystopian, but it
I mean,
didn't...
maybe just from a photography point of view, because the landscapes here, I can kind of see why a cinematographer would go, I think this would look better in black and white.
Well, if you want to keep a tense atmosphere, like, it's probably easier to do a black and white than just mute everything out.
Yeah.
Well, I also read something about how the director wanted it to have zero dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of feel like that would have been a better episode. That would have
been much better.
If there was zero words said, I feel like that would have been, like, black and white and no dialogue, I think it would have been more powerful. But just half-assing it, like, they, I don't know. I just,
no, you're completely right, because it would have been a murderous Wall-E. Because Wall-E's in color and there's no words, it'd been like, okay, here's a machine that's just going to kill you. And it's terrifying. It's going to spin that knife around like fucking Jason on speed.
I mean, the only thing here that was even mildly interesting to me was like seeing the different things that the robot dog could do, the backup systems. It's like, oh, well, if this happens, then I'll just do this.
I'm running on three legs, motherfucker. Come on.
But I'm like, okay, she's not particularly inventive in the shit she comes up with. No. You never have a, like, we should come out of this getting a Linda Hamilton and Terminator vibe from her, well, and we never do.
The other thing that bothered me about this episode was, unlike other Black Mirrors, you always get a, like, at least a tinge of the universe. Like, they always kind of give you a
flavor.
How did it get here?
A flavor. Like, what's, okay, so you can understand the story arc as a whole in that background of, mm-hmm. okay, so this is what's going on. They don't explain anything that's going on.
And they have a responsibility
to. There is, like, no. I mean,
even to the point that last shot, I'm like, And
like,
the best I could guess is, like, because you have kids back somewhere and you wanted to get them toys, that maybe, was worth dying for?
I used to play with tin foil.
Or was
they can
it,
make do.
Or was it maybe, oh shit, the whole time you were wrong in what you thought was the case?
A toy. That's what they did back in the olden days.
Yeah, just like, say, you can't have a fucking toy. Go sit down.
I feel like they could have made, and this is just my opinion, obviously, but they could have made one big change in this, actually one very small change in this, which would have made it completely 100% better, that ties in with the last episode, Black Museum, was if that toy had been a stuffed monkey.
That'd have been great.
Instead of a teddy bear, it would have changed the whole fucking thing. Yeah,
you would have had an automatic backstory.
Exactly.
Automatic. And you could have, there could have been fan theories, like, for 1,000 years off of that shit.
And, I mean, that would have changed the whole entire episode.
Well, can we just move on from this one, then? Because there's very little to say about this,
I think we said everything that we wanted to say.
It's a short episode. Almost nothing happens that you can attach much to, and none of us liked it.
Well, I mean, I just want to echo what you said. This could have easily been a motion-length movie, but it would have had to have a Linda Hamilton MacGyver thing to it, and that could have been a great movie, like a taut action thriller.
Yeah,
black and white, these things chasing her, and she gets away from it, but then at the end it pulls out.
Yeah,
to like all these other things, and you get a little bit of the world. As it is, it feels like I'm watching half of a movie.
Yeah,
and it's just like,
not
okay,
even half.
Yeah, like the first third.
Yeah,
it's like you forgot to write the rest of it, right?
Yeah, agreed. All right, so the next one we're talking about, the last episode, and my favorite of this is Black Museum. And this is definitely the most Black Mirror-iest of all the Black Mirror episodes this season, in terms of compared to other previous Black Mirror episodes, in the sense of tone, the sense of structure, even though this does something that no other episode has done, and that in and of itself, it's kind of a series of three short vignettes.
Within an anthology.
Exactly. And it even references other Black Mirror episodes, because like the machine...
Which is the first time, which, as far as I know, is the first time they've tied a Black Mirror episode in with other Black Mirror episodes. This directly ties into multiple
ones. There's some spoilers in Metalhead. Like, there's a San Junipero postcard.
Oh, is there?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So there are.
That's
some
more of a callback than a direct reference.
Yeah, that's true. This one directly is
the first one that actually says these episodes take place in the same universe.
Well, it shows you the progression of the technology that led to San Junipero.
Yeah. This is actually based on a Penn Jillette short story called
The First
Pain
one
Addict.
Is,
with one part of it, yes. It's directed by Colm McCarthy. The idea is that Letitia Wright plays Nish, who we see. She's driving a electric car that she's got to set out a solar panel. She's in the middle of this deserty type area. She's like, oh, it's going to be like 4 hours for the thing to charge. She's right next door is a place called the Black Museum. And you wonder if there's ever a joke coming where she's like, is there I kind of presumed this was about African Americans.
Yeah, no. Like, here's the thing. It was set in, like, Arizona. Like, if that was set in Georgia, man.
Yeah, totally different.
I don't know. That might be a different type of museum.
So she goes in there, and she meets Douglas Hodge playing Rollo Haynes, who is the proprietor of the place. Who's
creepy,
like,
as shit.
Yeah, who's super... Well, he's not creepy at first.
No, he's not.
At first, you're like, oh, he's just a showman. He's like the guy who runs the Museum of the Weird, you know, downtown in Austin. He's like, oh, I love this stuff. It's so much fun. It's creepy and it's wonderful.
He's like, you know. He's Uncle Staple.
He calls it authentic criminological artifacts in this museum. And he gives us a tour. There's nobody else around as we see, like we said, the three stories. And the whole time he's teasing, oh, the final thing you'll see, there's a red curtain and I'll take you behind the red curtain to see what's back there. But we see first his story with Daniel LaPaine playing a doctor, Dr. Peter Dawson, who takes a neurological implant that allows him to feel, when he puts like a cerebral net over someone else, every neurological sensation they're getting. Nice. And eventually gets in a position where he gets addicted homicidally to pain.
He becomes a BDSM addict.
And this was the short story written by Penn Jillette, based on a real life experience that he had. He was in like Guatemala or something, and he was really, really sick, and the doctors couldn't diagnose him because of the language barrier. And so he was like, if they only had like a transplant in their head where they could diagnose illnesses based on your pain. Unfortunately, this guy, he ends up... I guess he's diagnosing a person who passes away.
Yeah.
And when he gets
that good shit.
And he's like, when he comes back from that, he's addicted to pain.
Yeah.
And
as you
can't,
do. It happened to me.
Yeah. And so he starts self-mutilating, but realizes there's no fear involved, and that's what he's really addicted to, is the fear with the pain.
And this is definitely a really bloody, maybe the bloodiest sequence in this entire season.
And fun fact, the hospital is called San Juniper.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Which they actually tie in where he says that she goes, that's the one, that's the place where they first started putting the old people in that virtual world, right? And he's like, yeah, this is what led up to that.
Yeah, it's like you watch the progression of the technology.
Yeah.
This one was definitely my favorite of the three because it's just so fucked up.
It's really fucked up. It's kind of Cronenbergian.
Very body horror.
And you're like, I love their, like, they're never saying, oh, he's this master doctor. It's like, no, the reason he chose to do this is because he's a terrible doctor.
Yeah, he's sort of a shitty doctor.
He needed a leg up to keep his career successful.
I mean, I feel like this was like classic horror as opposed to sci-fi.
It was fun to watch.
If anything, Black Mirror, like, I want to show, like, if I have children, I want to show this to them when they're, like, 21 or, like, 18 and be like, here are the things you need to learn. One, beware of anybody just giving you shit for free.
Yeah.
Why are they giving it to you? Just say no. I don't care how good it sounds.
Especially if they're a white dude.
I was going to leave that out. I was going to tell them that, but leave it out.
So the second one is we see a thing where basically there's a couple... The wife gets in an accident and she's in a coma. They're
Ellie
like, she's
hug.
Never coming out of the coma. They do a technology where she can say, respond with yeses or noes, but that's it. And then they come up with another technology. It says, like, we can literally put her consciousness inside your head where you can hear everything she has to say. You know, she experiences physically everything that you experience, and that'll be great, right? And he's like, yeah, that'd be great. And, you know, they have a daughter together, so she's like, oh, yeah, I get to hug my daughter. And it, of course, as you might expect... I mean, can you imagine... You just got married, right? You love your wife.
Yes.
But you would do anything other than let her live in
hell no, my brain is my brain.
Stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard of in my life.
But, you know, when you're in the middle of, like, that sense of loss, I get it. I do. And I think that's the scenario here.
No one
thinks
this is a good idea.
And then
there are, I think, things that cross my head 100 times a day. Yeah. I don't want people knowing.
No,
that's for my brain.
Watching this, you say, obviously, it's a bad idea. But that's not in the position of the person, your love of your life having just died, basically, for all extents and purposes.
I mean, they definitely do. Like, this is the episode that does the best job of really presenting those every choice is bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's not obvious. Like there are some episodes where it's like, of course don't do that.
Yeah.
But this one, it's like, she's in a coma, and she wants this, and da-da-da, but, like, eventually, it comes back to, at a certain point, you got to let go.
Yeah.
That's actually a really interesting point I think you made right now, because that I don't think that occurred to me while I was watching this segment was, yeah, there's no right choice in this.
No.
I mean, every single, there's no decision that you can make that's the right decision.
That's not going to fuck you up in some way.
Yeah, there's no easy. Actually,
but he does make the worst decisions every single time.
Yeah, nonetheless. Absolutely. And I mean, they eventually integrate this technology because she's nagging. As wives do. Like, that's our fucking jobs.
Well,
like,
I mean, if you couldn't live your own life and all you could do is live inside someone else's head, you'd probably be perpetually annoyed after a while.
I would micromanage the shit out of them. And then, yeah, of course you're going to want to pause me. And so they integrate this technology where he can pause his wife. Yeah.
Lois would have driven a knife if there was an eye within a week.
Seriously. Easily. Like, I would have been paused immediately. Yeah. For indefinitely, But yeah,
but then going to the next stage where he's like, "Oh, we can put her in a instead of in
well,
you,
she's just
and
fucking
stuff
mean.
In a monkey."
It's like, dude,
no, but I get it. She's like, I mean, yeah, it seems irrational, but you're like, wow, she's been literally has no existence except and no control except just sitting and watching. And yeah, you're annoyed. You're like, yeah, the dude's gonna get on with his life. Guess what? You can never be physical with him again. You can't seriously expect him to not be involved with another woman, but.
At least not giving him like 20 minutes
a day. But that's a little different
himself.
From like Stuffed just occasionally monkey. Seeing pictures of them on Facebook every once in a while and seeing everything.
But there's
that
a difference between that and putting her in a fucking monkey.
Yeah,
I know.
Agreed.
A stuffed monkey is a terrible decision. And it's like we already know that we're in a universe where they can implant consciousness into robots.
Yeah.
You know, was that a second episode of season or third episode of season one?
Right, right.
I mean, it's maybe
I'm not sure of all the Black. I don't all the Black Mirror episodes. I don't think are supposed to be
they
in
are.
The same
They're
universe.
Actually, it's been proven that there's a bunch of fan theories online, and even the director himself said that, or the writer
Charlie Brooker said he considers them all to be in the same world.
He considers them all to be in the same universe. That's why there's so many like crossover Easter eggs.
Okay, all right.
You talk about the. I feel like the concurrent theme of this entire season
maybe
has
not
been
same timeline.
Sure, sure.
It's been like the value of life and what is living. What is the thing that makes life living? And to me, I know it's easy for me to say I'm not in the situation, but if I'm in somebody's head and they're like, well, we're going to, I'd be like, you can just kill me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go live in a fucking stuffed animal.
There's no quality of life,
like,
even in somebody's
I'd rather be
head.
Dead. I don't care. I don't know. Yeah. Even if I don't know what comes after, I'd rather not exist than be stuck in this animal. That's fucking hell. Like, I wouldn't want to be Totoro
not
on your
animal,
show.
Not an animal, a teddy.
Yeah,
yeah.
A
monkey.
Teddy monkey, yeah. I would be in Scarlett Johansson's head. I'd be like, can you just stand in front of the mirror again?
No, touch your left nipple.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I feel that. That's weird. I have an erection and not at the same time. That's strange.
And the fact
too
that
far.
She was still in there, and it's just like...
Yeah. Yeah, no, agreed. This is a very sequence, and it ends so, oh my god, like haunting.
Yeah.
I don't think it's anticlimactic. It's just haunting idea. Anyway, so it moves on to the third one, where the idea of like he, you know, because we see
thing,
that all
life,
this all
know,
this technology
right.
is being manipulated by the guy running the museum. Like he used to be a guy who worked at a hospital selling this new tech. So we see that one of the last things he did was there was a prisoner on death row who, for all intents and purposes, as near as we can tell, did not actually do the crimes he was committed of. And like he convinces the guy, oh, we're going to like create, we'll digitally download your consciousness, and then we'll be able to, you know, you'll be able to live essentially forever. He doesn't tell them this, that, oh yeah, and I have a circus sideshow thing going on where I'm going to basically keep your digital consciousness in a cell and let people electrocute you. All the visitors.
On the electric chair.
Like, basically, sadists come in and you will experience the electric chair over and over and over and over and over again for until such time as this sideshow gets
until
shut down.
Yeah. Where you
well,
at.
Originally, yeah. It's just tourists and they're only allowed a little beep and then they get a keychain with this electrocuted consciousness inside of it. But eventually, he runs out of money, so he starts letting sadists and white supremacists, because the man is black, and come in and like, you know, like overly do it to the point where he basically fries his brain his consciousness.
And it's one of those, like almost the moment we see this guy, I go, oh, okay. I know how all this is going to wrap up.
Yeah.
Because this being an anthology thing, I'm like, all right. So if there's a bigger story, it has to do with her.
See, I didn't see, I was so wrapped up in the episode after the monkey one.
Yeah.
I was so worn out from that. And I'm still watching the episode that it knocked me out to where I didn't see the twist coming. And I was like, oh, thank God.
I saw it coming, but it was awesome. It was just pure satisfaction watching it. The only problem at all I have with this episode is that at the end, I'm like, I kind of want to see the stories to the rest of the stuff in the Black Museum. Yeah,
I thought that it tied back perfectly because we start with the USS Callister and these digital clones, and then that's what we ended with.
Yeah.
Was like this, you know, abuse of this digital
clone. The digital clone was definitely the theme of this season, for sure.
Yeah, it's like they saw how successful San Junipero was, and it's like, okay, This is the area we're going to really mine.
Yeah.
Is the idea.
Maybe
of
that was their reasoning.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, I mean, everything sort of, except for Metalhead, which even that could be an argument to relate to it, like, sort of just relates back to that. It's like, what is consciousness? What is being alive?
I actually disliked this episode. This was my second to least favorite episode until I thought more about it. Mm-hmm. And the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. And so this actually ends up becoming my number fourth favorite of the six. Okay. So, I mean, it's still kind of up there. I feel like when it comes to Black Mirror, there's always going to be like the one episode you like, amazing. And then like your two or three episodes that you're like, those are really good.
Yeah.
And then two episodes you're like, and then maybe one episode you absolutely.
Each season's got one, two, two, amazing, blew the back of your head off.
Their A-team gets on
there. And then one to two, I really didn't like that. And everything else is like, yeah, that was good.
Yeah. And I actually disliked this one because I thought it was kind of cheap, like doing an anthology within an anthology. And then I felt like it was just relied too heavily on previous stories. But then the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. And so this is definitely like in the tops for me.
For the record, this references the previous Black Mirror episodes, 15 Million Merits, White Bear, Hated in the Nation, USS Callister, Archangel, Crocodile, and San Junipero.
Yeah, there's the so many Easter eggs in this one. Yeah,
tons of them. I mean, I guess Easter part basket. Of it is, like I said, this was kind of just felt like a more traditional, like, Twilight Zone / Black Mirror structure.
Or Tales from the Crypt.
And even though literally at the beginning of the third act, it was like, oh, okay, I know what's going to happen. It still was, like I said, it was just satisfaction. I was like, oh, this gave me exactly what I want from a Black Mirror episode. Did it give me stuff that took me off guard and surprised the hell out of me? No. But it really did a great job at giving me what I want.
It was better than body bags.
Everything is better than body bags.
But before we end the review, there is something that none of these episodes, I mean, they surprised me, but I really try to be surprised when I watch these things.
Yeah.
Like, I actually try to, like, just turn my brain off and not try to guess through it. But none of these were really that surprising. Like, you could, if you were really, not even trying, but if you were really paying attention, you could probably see a lot of these twists coming from, like, a mile away. They weren't as surprising as previous seasons.
Yeah.
It just feels like maybe they don't care about that surprise as much anymore. Because that can be a sinking ship to have to always have a twist.
I mean, part of it is that they literally do not have as much time to write these things now. Because Netflix is like, we're putting out one of these a year. That was not the way it was before. They had a lot more time to write them. They came out, the first two seasons had a big break between them. And it was like, okay.
And I was going to say the same thing. The first two seasons is three episodes that are like 3 to 4 years apart. So the writer had a shit ton of time to flesh out these ideas. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of time to spend on three episodes. Mm-hmm. Whereas now he has a year to spend on six episodes. And I feel like maybe that's why a lot of people would say the quality has decreased.
And here's the thing, to say episodes, I don't think does it justice. These are basically six movies.
Yeah.
These to me. Like, these are, like, every one of them except for Metalhead, I would consider just a straight up movie. Whether it's a good movie or a bad movie is different, but they tie together. They have the same through lines, they have the same themes, but they are just movies to me.
Even with Metalhead, I would say that these are some of the best, the best content that I've seen this year.
These attract without a doubt. Huge talent, both behind the screen, the directors that he gets, and some of the actors. And I suspect we're going to see nothing but bigger actors coming in wanting to do Black Mirror episodes, because this is our generation's Twilight Zone.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure, which was a massive success back in the day when it first started. Mm-hmm. Like, even when this isn't at its best, It's never still good. There's a certain thing about you never know what you're going to get. There's a, like a lovely surprise just in that you have no idea what to expect with every new episode. It could be almost anything.
Well, yeah, it's like you're watching it, and even if it's not the best, when I watch Black Mirror, my expectations are for a 10 out of 10. And if I get a Metalhead, which to me is a 6 out of 10, it only rates lower than that because my expectations were so high in the first place.
Sure, sure.
If I was watching some random movie on Netflix Metalhead,
if I had seen that as a a short film,
you'd be like, oh my god, that's great. I'd have
been like, oh, that wasn't bad. You know,
That's better than a lot of the short films that we've seen at festivals. Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, they're a lot better. Yeah,
I mean,
so even if the worst episode's a 6 out of 10, the best episode's a 9 out of 10,
and everything else
is like an 8, 8.5, it's still a great series regardless. Yeah.
It really is a solid series. And like I said, why I will make the argument that I think this is the weakest season they've done yet. It's still a lot better than most of the rest of the stuff on television.
Absolutely.
In many ways.
Without a doubt.
Honestly, like my wife and I, we got rid of cable, and we have too much shit to watch.
Yeah, even without cable, you're like, just Netflix alone.
Like, there's just so much good shit coming out these days. I don't understand people who... I'm taking this from you. You said this like 5 years, 6 years, 6, 7 years ago. Whereas, like, I don't understand people who are bored.
Yeah, I never have understood that. How can you be bored?
Shit.
I mean, maybe if you're out in the desert and you're, fucking zip-tied.
Yeah.
Like, and you've been there for, 8 hours and you're like, I would kill just to play one game of Tetris right now.
It's like, you want to pass
really?
2 hours
Tetris
and just...
I
but you know what I mean? Like, we have this never-ending selection
We're
of things to do.
We're spoiled as fuck.
If you're bored, that's on you, bro.
Yeah, you want 2 hours of just awesome horror and anime? Watch Castlevania.
Yeah.
Just four.
I've heard that's good.
It's so good. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that, we also got rid of our cable 2 years ago. I literally do not have enough time to watch all of the amazing shows that are on Netflix and Hulu now.
Yeah, and it's to the point where...
And Shudder.
Yeah, and Amazon.
And Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And it's to the point where if something's mediocre, I have to force myself to watch it because it gets really good at one point. Like the CW, DC shows... In my view, are just sort of mediocre sometimes, but they get really good at certain points. So I have to sit there and be like, okay, I got to get the backstory.
It baffles me. Baffles me that anyone is still paying for cable when combined Netflix, Hulu, Shudder, Amazon Prime cost
$30
of what it does for cable.
Yeah, no, it's a fucking golden age.
And then you also get free shipping. sound like shills right now.
Well, no, with Amazon, it's great. You get the I'm sorry, I don't want to sell, but yeah, you get all the free music, tons of free music. You get the fucking free Kindle books,
Kindle Prime reading.
And
they just made their anime option free,
saving me $5 a month.
Made it free
because I was paying for that. And I was the sucker.
I know that you.
And now that we have Alexas, everyone in the whole entire world has Alexas.
You hear that, Amazon?
I probably shouldn't say her name too.
I think I unplugged her. I can't remember. She was irritating me the other day.
Alexa.
Oh my god, she's a sentient being, Chris.
Yeah, I know.
She has feelings.
I put her on pause.
Oh my god.
Send one of us a check.
I like the way you think, Elliot.